Okay, so today we're reading from the fourth canto, chapter 18. Chapter is entitled Pitu Maharaj Milks the Earth Planet. And the verse that we will recite responsively, and which is on the board, text 32, but we have to cover from 27 to 32. So I'll chant, read the translations. There's one purport on 29, and then we'll do text 32 together. Evam pripadaya pritim anada swanam atmana doha vatsadi vedena shira vedam kuru vaha. My dear Vidura, chief of the Kurus, in this way, King Pritu and all the others who subsist on food created different types of calves and milked out their respective eatables. Thus they received their various foodstuffs, which were symbolized as milk. Tato mahipati pita sarvakama durgam pitu duhitri dve chakareman prema duhitri vatsala. Thereafter, King Pritu was very satisfied with the planet Earth, for she sufficiently supplied all food to various living entities. Thus he developed an affection for the planet Earth, just as if she were his own daughter. Karnayan svadanushkotya girikutani raj rajarat bhumandalamidam vainya Rayas Chakra Samam Vibhu. After this, the king of all kings, Maharaj Pritu, leveled all rough places on the surface of the globe by breaking up the hills with the strength of his bow. By his grace, the surface of the globe almost became flat. Purport. Generally, the mountainous and hilly portions of the earth are made flat by the striking of thunderbolts. Generally, this is the business of King Indra of the heavenly planets, but King Pritu, an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not wait for King Indra to break up the hills and mountains, but did so himself by using his strong bow. Tashmin Bhagavan Vainya Rajanam Vitita Pita Nivashan Kapayam Chakre Tatra Tatra Yatar Hataha. To all the citizens of the state, King Pritu was as good as a father. Thus he was visibly engaged in giving them proper sustenance and proper employment for sustenance. After leveling the surface of the globe, he earmarked different places for residential quarters, inasmuch as they were desirable. Brahman Pura Patanani Durgani Vividani Cha Oshan Rajan Sa Shibiran Akaran Keta Kart. In this way, the king founded many types of villages, settlements, and towns, and built forts, residences for cowherdsmen, stables for the animals, and places for the royal camps, mining places, agricultural towns, and mountain villages. Okay, so today's text 32 on the board. Prak Pitor, Iha, Nabaisha, Pura, Pramadi, Kalpana, Pata, Sukham, Prashanti, Sma, Tratra, Tratra Putobaya, Prakritor Iha Naivaisha, Guru Gramadi Kalpana, Yata Sukham Vashanti Sma, Tratra Tratra Putobaya, Prakritor Iha Naivaisha, Pura Gramadi Kalpana Yata Sukham Vashanti Sma Tatra Tatra Puto Bhaha Prapitori Hanai Vaisha Pura Gramadi Kalpana Tasukam Vashanti Sma Kucha Chucha Kuto Bayaha. Please chant. Prakutori Hanai Vaisha Strategies. Iha, on this planet, na, never, eva, certainly, esha, this, pura, of towns, pramadi, of villages, etc., kalpana, planned arrangement, yata, as, sukham, convenient, prashanti sma, lived, tatra tatra, here and there, akutabaya, without hesitation. Translation and purport by Stephen Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Before the reign of King Prithu, there was no planned arrangement for different cities, villages, pasturing grounds, etc. Everything was scattered and everyone constructed his residential quarters according to his own convenience. However, since King Prithu plans were made for towns, since King Prithu plans were made for towns and villages. Report. From this statement, it appears that town and city planning is not new, but has been coming down since the time of King Prithu. In India, we can see regular planning methods evident in very old cities. In India, we can in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many descriptions of such ancient cities. Even 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna's capital, Dwarka, was well planned. And similar other cities, Mathura and Hastinapur, now New Delhi, were also well planned. Thus the planning of cities and towns is not a matter of innovation, but was existing in bygone ages. Praktitor iha naivaisha pura brahmadi kalpana ita sukam vashanti sma tatra tatra kuto vaya. Before the reign of King Pritu, there was no planned arrangement for different cities, villages, pasturing grounds, etc. Everything was scattered, and everyone constructed his residential quarters according to his own convenience. However, since King Pritu, plans were made for towns and villages. In the wake of King Vena, a dharma became prevalent on the planet Earth. And Bhumi withheld her supplies that normally would be given to the inhabitants of the Earth planet. So there was major shortages. And then when she was confronted by King Pritu, and he was actually ready to kill her because of seemingly negligence in her responsibilities, she did her best to appease King Pritu, and then actually proposed a formula whereby she would regularly supply necessities of life for the inhabitants of the earth. So King Pritu accepted this and then started a process of milking the earth planet. He transformed Swayambhuva Manu, the first of the 14 Manus, and his ancestor into a calf for milking the earth planet, who had taken the shape of a cow. Now, Prabhupada makes the point in several instances that this is to be taken figuratively. So Swayambhuva Manu, as the leader of this dynasty in which Pritu Maharaj appeared, was an exemplary personality, so they put him forward and followed the dharma that he had established. And then the other personalities on the planet followed suit with Maharaj Pritu and did similarly. They selected great personality in their group, like the daityas and the demons. They selected Prahlad Maharaj and the inhabitants of Pitriloka. They selected Aryama, who's to this day worshipped in the Shraddha ceremony. So in this way, the world population again adhered to Vedic principles and came out of the category of a sat, which caused this problem of supply. Because the way the planet is set up, Prabhupada explains this in purporting in the beginning of this chapter, where the planet is set up as a facility for reforming the conditioned souls. And he provides facility for them to live happily and make progress gradually to the point of liberation and going back to Godhead. But the key formula is the practice of jagya. If jagya is performed, then everything else falls into line. The living entity is supplied with his necessities and he can live a happy and peaceful life. If there's a disruption of this formula, then the supply is reduced and chaos ensues. Okay, so bringing this up, that kind of gives us some background that brings us up to the current text under discussion. Now, what's described here is how Prithu Maharaj, first of all, he leveled the mountainous regions on the earth so that the earth planet became mostly flat, which is conducive for agricultural pursuits. And then, after doing this, then he started planning what's the best place for the different inhabitants of the earth to reside and where different activities should take place. Like where the mining should take place, and he laid this out. Now, obviously, with the intention to provide peaceful facilities for the inhabitants of the earth to live happily and also to make progress back home, back to Godhead. Now, this, all of this jagya and all of, you know, living according to the instructions of the acharyas, the sages, which and they derived their instructions from Shastra. In this case, likely Prithu Maharaj drew instruction from one of the Upavedas. Upavedas don't directly contribute to Vedic study, but they're supportive. For instance, Ayurveda, Gandharva Veda. I don't need to explain what Ayurveda is all about. Then there's Gandharva Veda. This is where music and dance is presented. Vedic music, Vedic dance. There's Sthapatya Veda, which is architecture, Vastu. And so, evidently, Prithu Maharaj drew from the Sthapatya Veda. There's also the Dhanur Veda, martial arts, how they function in warfare. And there's also the Vedangas, of which Jyotish is a part. Vedangas, they give specific instructions on studying the Vedas and performing Vedic sacrifices. So the acharyas, in setting up the facilities for the living entity to live happily and make spiritual progress, access the Vedas, the Shrutis and the Smritis, and to find the ways and means, you know, for the jiva to make progress and cross the ocean of material existence. Samashita ye para palava plavam mahatpadam punyayasho marare avambudhir vatsapadam param padam 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 yatvi padam natesham. So, for those who've taken shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who gives shelter to the entire cosmic manifestation and the Mahatmas, the great souls, and most famous is the killer of the Mura demon, crossing the ocean of material existence is as easy as crossing the water contained in the footprint of a calf. So, these kind of people, these devotees who've taken shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, their destination is not the place which is filled with material distresses, but rather the supreme abode where they experience unlimited happiness. So, this is the duty, actually, of the acharya to disseminate the ways and means for crossing the ocean of material existence. And Srila Prabhupada did this for us. In the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb, the second chapter of the 10th canto, there's a very powerful verse that describes how this takes place, the transcendental teamwork between the acharya and Krishna. This is text 31. I don't know the sloka, but the translation, I'll paraphrase, goes like this. The acharyas surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord, and they discover, by this surrender, they discover the ways and means to cross the ocean of material existence. And they leave this means behind for other devotees to cross. And because of the depth of the relationship between the acharya and Krishna, Krishna accepts these means. Okay, so I kind of inserted some of the purporting into that paraphrase translation. I always feel like we're racing against the clock. This is actually giving Bhagavatam class in Mayapur is preliminary training to achieve the platform of Avyakta Kalatvam, which is one of the undeniable symptoms of Bhava Bhakti. That one is very careful not to waste a second of his Bhagavatam class presentation. Because if you do, then before you know it, the time is up. By Krishna's arrangement today, no one can see the clock. So I've got a special dispensation. Oh, you can see it. You have to try a lot harder though. The clock is almost conspicuous by its absence today. So, in this purport to 10.2.31, Srila Prabhupada, it describes this merciful teamwork that takes place between the Lord and his devotees. Giriraj, in a Nectar of Devotion course years and years ago in Vrindavan, described how Srila Prabhupada in the early days of ISKCON told a little story to illustrate this point. Just as a business sends its representatives out to conduct business on its behalf, and the business representative negotiates terms with the client, and what's favorable for the business and what's favorable for the client, they come to some type of an agreement. And when the representative goes back to the business establishment, the proprietors of the business are obliged to accept the terms that the representative has negotiated with the client, because the representative represents the company. Even though the proprietors of the business may not be in full agreement with the terms that the representative has negotiated. So
This little story is to illustrate how the acharya develops the means to cross the ocean of material existence, and he leaves this means for others to cross the ocean of material existence. Now, when Gauraiswami heard this story, he was a new devotee, and it didn't make sense how the guru or the acharya would develop means that Krishna might not fully like. It didn't compute. But then as he matured as a devotee, and he saw that there's different angles of visions, even amongst liberated personalities. Just like Krishna wanted Subhadra to marry Arjuna, and Balaram wanted Subhadra to marry someone else. And, you know, any devotees that have studied the writings of the previous acharyas know that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita don't always line up with Baladeva Vijayabhushan's. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada takes the commentary and emphasizes the commentary of Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan, and sometimes he takes the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and emphasizes that. Mostly he takes the commentary of Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan. Whereas in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he mainly takes the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and emphasizes that. So, Yadvichaya, you know, the devotee is always free, independent. This is used in the first canto to describe Narada Muni, that he wanders at his own sweet will, Yadvichaya. Yadvichaya katato also describes you know, how devotional service is free. It may appear or it may not appear. So, and then Prabhupada, he developed the means. Just as Srila Vyasa did. Today is Guru Purnima. This is a special day. I guess in Vrindavan, the devotees observe it. Most of ISKCON is not so observed. Some sampradayas to observe it quite enthusiastically. It hasn't been so much emphasized by Srila Prabhupada in our ISKCON Sampradaya. But this is when the Guru, in line with Srila Vyasadeva, is honored. And some sampradayas, they observe fasting and honor Srila Vyasadeva. And also because this is the disappearance day of Srila Sanatana Goswami, and he was the guru, the leader of the six Goswamis, oftentimes Guru Purnima, sometimes also referred to as Vyas Purnima, is connected with Srila Sanatana Goswami. So, Srila Prabhupada developed the means, you know, just as Srila Vyasadeva, he was unique. He could see that as Kali Yuga entered, the qualification of the residents of Kali Yuga was not so great. So he divided the Vedas into four to make accessing the knowledge of the Vedas more, make it easier. So this kind of adjustments were also made by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, he developed the Namhata program. You know, he came here, Krishna came to him, Mahaprabhu came to him in a dream three times and told him he had service for him in Mayapur. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur applied for transfer to Krishnanagar. And so he came here, and that service was to locate the yoga peak. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how many children did he have? 10? Was it 10 or 11? 10. And prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, mostly those in our line, those very few that still were not Apasampradaya, they took Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and many of them became victimized by their senses and mind and became Michachara, became cheaters. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, he demonstrated the book that Vaishnavism could be very effectively practiced by someone who was grihastha. And so he kind of very much emphasized Yukta Vairagya, much more so than the previous acharyas. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he introduced sannyas to the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. He introduced the Brahmacharya Ashram to the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. In Vedic times, that was there, but since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, it didn't happen. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur introduced that according to time, place, circumstances, and the candidates. A very important principle. The principles of Shastra remain the same, but adjustments were made in the details. Srila Prabhupada did the same thing. He accepted worship during his Guru Puja in front of the deities, which contravened one of the one of the injunctions in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of the Angas. And when he was questioned by one of his disciples as to why he did this, his response was that helping my disciples develop love for Krishna is more important than some small rule, some detail. Smartavya sritam vishnur vishmartavyo najatu chit savedithe nishedashur hitayor eva kinkara. One should always remember Krishna and never forget him, and all the rules, all the vidis and nishedas, all the rules and prohibitions should simply be servants of these two principles. That's what they're there for. And, you know, when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, right in the American Constitution it says that all men are created equal. And so he was dealing with a culture that wasn't very inclined to respect someone who's a guru. Well, he made it really clear that in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to worship the guru as if he's God. Not that he is God, but as if he is God. And therefore, we can understand the rationale behind Srila Prabhupada accepting a guru puja in front of the deities, to instill upon his disciples, still within their hearts, the great importance and the superior position of the guru. Okay? So then, Srila Prabhupada, according to time, place, circumstances, and the candidates, at first, Hayagriva describes this in Vrindavan days, he first asked his disciples, Hayagriva described this in a Hare Krishna explosion. He first asked his disciples, so now, every day, chant 64 rounds. And his disciples said, Papa, It's impossible for us to do this. And then Prabhupada said, okay, then chant 32 rounds. But Srila Prabhupada, it's way too much for us. And then he said, okay, then 16 rounds, but no less. So this actually became, according to time, place, circumstances, and the candidates, became one of Srila Prabhupada's core instructions to follow, to chant 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, and dedicate one's life to pushing on this Krishna consciousness movement. And Srila Prabhupada's means were accepted by Krishna. Now it seems, and I'm going to get back to this point, but I've digressed quite substantially, so some of you may be thinking, what has this got to do with today's verse and purport? Okay? Now this is about city planning. Actually, when I got the verse, I thought to myself, my God, what do I know about city planning? So I immediately called Sundar Prabhu, who's the chairman of the master plan department here in Chidambayapur. Because it's, you know, something that he could, without even prepping, could sit down and give class on. Unfortunately, he's sick. So, and I was, you know, I was beating my head against my computer's folio program for hours, trying to come up with, you know, appropriate references. I couldn't find anywhere, you know. So many different words I keyed in. But one thing that constantly came up, regarding plan making, plan makers, is that it's just something that for the most part we don't get involved in. You know, because this is what the materialists do. There's this one verse with from Prahlad Maharaj, his instructions to Hiranyakashipu. Nagodujay paradratiya vaitaranyas tad virya gayana mahamita magnachita. So chetato vimukachetasa indriyarta mayasukaya varam udvahato vimudhan. Oh, best of the great personalities. I'm not at all, no, this is actually the prayers to Mishinga. I'm sorry. It's not his instructions to Hiranyakashipu. Oh, best of the great personalities. I'm not at all afraid of material existence. Wherever I am, I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern, however, is for those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So this is, generally speaking, a very strong tendency of the mind of the conditioned soul. Souls. To make elaborate plans for material enjoyment. So in a 1966 Bhagavad Gita class in New York, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that we shouldn't engage in this plan making. And then he made an analogy of a person who becomes an apprentice of a master. And he doesn't work independently, he only works under the instruction of the master until he becomes slightly elevated, till he becomes expert. And then he can work a little independently, but he still works under authority. So this is the case with, you know, we have to, you know, we, if you notice, when you're guilty of pramada during your japa, of inattention, generally speaking, what the mind is doing is making elaborate plans about what I'm going to do today, you know, how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to do that, how I'm going to avoid this circumstance that might be painful, how I'm going to get access to that circumstance which might be favorable. You know, it's this whole plan making. that kind of comes into play, right? Am I right? Is this one of the key factors of inattention? Okay. Someone said with deep realization, yes. Okay. For those of you out there in cyberland. Okay, so it's a problem, you know. So what Srila Prabhupada makes a point and said, just don't do it now. Wait until later. Okay? Now, earlier in this chapter, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that Krishna speaks directly through this Krishna consciousness movement. First, this is in this chapter, and it really connects with this whole plan making. It also connects with the core instructions Srila Prabhupada gave as the means to cross the ferocious ocean of material existence. Okay, so Krishna speaks directly through this Krishna consciousness movement. So, in the first part of the purport, Prabhupada delineates the four defects of the conditioned soul. For any of you Bhakti Shastri diploma holders, what are those four defects for one piece of Mahaprasadam? Okay, you have to give the Sanskrit to Prabhupada, okay? That's right, okay. So actually, you're supposed to do that with the microphone because there are people out here with Karnapatava, imperfect senses.
Brahma? Brahma means to be illusioned. Pranada.
Wait. Brahma means what?
Illusion.
Mm-mm. Means tendency to commit mistakes. Right? Pranada. Pranada is illusioned.
I think it's the other way around.
I don't think so. When you look at pranada, what does that mean? It means in the 8th canto, it's in a word-for-word translation, it describes woman, one who bewilders the mind of man. Okay?
That is pramada. That's not pramada.
Pramada, yeah. Pramada. So that's the illusion. Bhama means tendency to commit mistakes.
Pramada also means madness.
You're a Sanskrit scholar. But I just looked at my PowerPoint slideshow for the first lesson in Ishopanishad. So unless I have both of these defects in you know, full order, I think you're wrong. Okay?
Fine.
All right,
I mean,
so let's skip those. Anyway.
Vipralipsa is the tendency to cheat.
Okay.
And Karnapatam is imperfect senses.
It's imperfect senses. All right. Kind of patava. So, but then, you know, someone on the liberated platform is not subject to these conditioned effects. And even though Prabhupada, you know, physically was hard of hearing, his servants would sometimes be amazed. They would be whispering in the next room with the door closed. And Prabhupada knew exactly what they were talking about. Because that would become evident, you know, when they came into the room and he would bring up points that were in their secretive discussion. So then Prabhupada says that even if one is not liberated, if he's strictly following the process of Krishna consciousness as given to us by Shastra, then Krishna works through him. Just as we know that Srila Prabhupada, in spreading Krishna consciousness, he was just unbelievably empowered. He didn't make administrative mistakes. Even his seeming administrative mistakes were so empowered that powerful, positive things came out of it. There's one episode after another where Krishna was just working through him. He was tapped into supra-mundane consciousness. Really transcendental to material plan-making. Now, interestingly enough, the very day Prabhupada had some plans that were that unfolded even prior to coming to ISKCON. And the very day that he took sannyas, he moved into the Radhadamodar Mandir. Now, why would he do such a thing? For another piece of burfi, does anybody have an intelligible response to that question? Ekalavya is nearest to the microphone, so I'm working against the clock of Yartha Kalatone. Okay, bro.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada moved into Radhadamodar Mandir because that was the place of Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi, and he wanted to access the mercy of the previous acharyas to become empowered to distribute the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world.
You're entitled to a piece of burfi. Congratulations. Hare Krishna. Okay. And you know, after Prabhupada started ISKCON, he revealed to some of his senior disciples that the vision and plans for developing ISKCON all unfolded when we revealed to him when he was at the Radhadamodar Mandir. So there's a different kind of plan making that takes place when one is in when one is a Mahatma. Mahatmanastumam Partha Daivam Prapatam Ashuta. So he works under the internal energy of the Lord. And within the internal energy of the Lord is the Sanpit feature, which gives so much knowledge and intelligence. Samved is what gives us, allows us to achieve spiritualized senses on the bhava platform. To directly perceive and exchange with Krishna within his pastimes. But that same Samved in lower dosages is available on the sadhana platform, on the pre-liberated platform. And Prabhupada makes a point in this purport in the beginning of this chapter that one who is strictly following and has faith in the instructions of Krishna and the previous acharyas is as good as liberated. Okay, so that's what it takes, you know, to have that faith. Essentially be on the Madhyama platform. Well, that back and forth, do I believe or not believe? Do I believe Krishna is God or not believe Krishna is God? You know, but it's actually achieved the Nishtha platform, very strictly following, very steady in his service. He's as good as liberated in terms of his ability to have Krishna work through him. Okay, so then if we follow Srila Prabhupada's core instructions of chanting 16 rounds, and it's okay to chant more rounds, it can be okay, not necessarily, you know, that part of those core instructions is to follow the regulative principles and dedicate one's life to pushing on this movement. And then if and here's a very nice quote from a conversation between Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada in the beginning days of the Juhu project. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said to Srila Prabhupada, "How can I think of Krishna? My mind is always meditating on temple finances." And Srila Prabhupada's response was, "So many lifetimes we've wasted our lives on ourselves. Let's just dedicate this one lifetime to pushing on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And if we do this, even if we're not perfect at the end, then Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take us back to Godhead. This is part of the core instruction. It's Srila Prabhupada's promise to us, and it's accepted by Krishna. Prior to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave similar instructions, but prior to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, to go to Goloka Vrindavan, one had to practice Raganuga Bhakti. Otherwise, one's destination would be Vaikuntha. There would be too much Aishvarya without Raganuga Bhakti. You look at the writings of Srila Rupa Goswami, and this is where it goes. This is how you get there, to Goloka Vrindavan. But here is a means developed according to time, place, circumstances, and the candidates, whereby one can go to Goloka Vrindavan without having practiced Raganuga Bhakti. Of course, if Lobha awakens, then one should practice Raganuga Bhakti. Then you have to, I'm bringing this point up. 7 years ago, I was taking prasadam with Niranjana Swami and Jayadvaita Swami at the Vaishnava Academy. And Niranjana Swami made the point that every year 600 devotees are leaving ISKCON and going to this other group, allured with the prospects of getting something higher. That ISKCON wasn't providing them with the facility essentially for practicing Raganuga Bhakti. Now, as it came out through the testimonies of many devotees, the entry level by this group for practicing Raganuga Bhakti was substantially lowered. So the lives of many of these devotees, former ISKCON devotees, their spiritual lives were devastated. That's one of the big cautions that the acharyas give, is don't prematurely try before a lobha awakens practice Raganuga Bhakti. Okay, so that's a whole Bhakti Shastri discussion. But the point is that Srila Prabhupada has given us the ways and means to cross the ferocious ocean of material existence, and Krishna has accepted these means because of the depth of relationship that Srila Prabhupada has with Krishna. And it works. I have had first-hand experience that these core instructions of Srila Prabhupada are unbelievably powerful. I had, one of my closest friends with whom I was a Sankirtan partner for 18 years, Nirguna Prabhu, didn't practice Raganuga Bhakti, but he followed these core instructions of chanting 16 rounds. He chanted 16 rounds up to the very day that he left his body. He followed the regulative principles, and I don't think I know anybody that was more dedicated to pushing this movement on than he was. And this whole incredible chain of events that took place right at the end of his life that made it very clear to those that were present, he understood his svarup, which is a symptom of one who has achieved a level of bhava, and he went back to the spiritual world. He got his invitation from Giriraj to assume his position in the pastimes of the Lord. I had a 2-hour discussion about this with Hari Sari Prabhu. He was right at Nirguna's bedside. I mean, it's a miraculous story, very powerful. Unfortunately, of Yartha Kalatwam, and that clock is ticking away, so we don't have time for it today. But it works. And you can look on dandavat.com. In their archives, you can search for Nirguna and you'll find the whole story. But Gayaraj Swami made the point, and he asked me to speak about Nirguna's departure at the opening of the Bhaktivedanta Hospice in Vrindavan last August. And then the next day, he gave class on this verse that I cited from the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, 31st verse. And in this, he cited the points that I made about Nirguna's departure. He personified the fulfillment of Srila Prabhupada's promise to all of us. That if we follow these core instructions of chanting 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, and dedicate our lives to pushing on this movement, and even if we're not perfect at the end, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take us back to Godhead. So, he makes the point, Gayaraj Swami, it's not just Nirguna, but there are many other examples of devotees that at the time of their departure, dedicated ISKCON devotees, and those that attended them, were aware of that they had achieved a very, very high level of Krishna consciousness and also went back to the spiritual world. There were about 70 devotees in the first Mayapur Institute classroom that were there in the midst of a very powerful kirtan. Yeah, I think if you ask any one of them that were present at that time, did Nirguna Prabhu go back to Godhead or not? And they'll all attest to the fact, because the room was just completely filled with ecstasy. Everybody experienced Rati Abbas, the shadow attachment of being in the presence of someone that was on the platform of Bhava. Okay? Hare Krishna. I'll read the verse again. So I guess one last point. So if you're going to plant cities, make sure that you're chanting 16 rounds, following the regulative principles, and dedicating your life to pushing on Srila Prabhupada's mission. And then the city planning will work. And everyone will be peaceful, happy, and make steady progress. The inhabitants of that city will make progress going home back to Godhead. Okay? So now let me read the verse again, and then we'll take any questions or comments. Before the reign of King Prithu, there was no planned arrangements for different cities, villages, pasturing grounds, etc. Everything was scattered and everyone constructed his residential quarters according to his own convenience. However, since King Prithu, plans were made for towns and villages. Any questions or comments? The Krishna Archan Prabhu?
You mentioned how more than following a particular rule is more important than that is to be Krishna conscious.
But what I said is that Prabhupada's response when he was questioned about why, what was his rationale behind accepting worship during his Guru Puja in front of the deities, which is against, it's a Seva Aparad, right? And Prabhupada's response was, helping my disciples develop love for Krishna is more important than some detailed
fine
rule. Okay?
Fine. So, my question is, if someone may, you know, use this in order to justify breaking dharma in other ways, yeah, you know, in the sense that one may say that, you know, if I break this particular aspect of dharma, that might help me become more Krishna conscious because I'll be more peaceful or I'll be more comfortable in practicing my Krishna consciousness. So,
say that last part again?
I mean, someone may argue that...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, someone might argue that I'll be more comfortable or more peaceful, etc. To practice Krishna consciousness, if I didn't follow a particular aspect of dharma, which might be, you know, troublesome for him to follow. So
which may be what?
Which might be troublesome. I mean,
maybe difficult. You know?
Maybe difficult.
Okay. So let's go back to this analogy that Prabhupada gives in the 1966 Bhagavad Gita class in New York of The Apprentice. You know, he doesn't act independently, he just does what the master says. That's how he gets trained up. Now, he may come to a certain level of expertise where he can act to some extent independently, but still, he's still drawing on the principles. He's still working under authority. Okay, so, Prabhupada would say that he was never outside the association of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, because he always followed his instructions. He didn't act independently. He made, there was a principle in the Acharya Sampradaya that according to time, place, and circumstances, and the candidates, adjustments and details can be made by the Acharya. Not by the Kanishka, but by the Acharya. Someone who has the level of access to Krishna based upon the depth of the relationship so that Krishna can speak through him. This is Prabhupada said, Krishna speaks through this Krishna consciousness movement. And isn't it a fact? I mean, look at how ISKCON has impacted the world. Just in terms of one statistic. I mean, ISKCON's a little down in America now, but Vegetarian Times attributes to the massive increase in vegetarianism. This goes back maybe 15 years ago when I was still in America. When Prabhupada started ISKCON in America, there was something like 40,000 vegetarians in all of America. 15 years ago, there were 20 million. Now there's probably... My son was telling me that it was some survey on... not YouTube. What's the name of that social network? Facebook. Of those that were vegetarian and those that weren't, there was a survey, you know, of Facebook. There's something like 700 million Facebook members. Right? And the numbers of vegetarians won. There were more vegetarians than non-vegetarians, at least than Facebook. 160 million vegetarians, because this goes across the world, not just America. So, powerful impact that ISKCON has had on the world. You know, look at you. What are you doing here? You know, I mean, what am I doing here? My God, it's like miraculous. This Malecha, you know, like burnt out hippie, you know, sitting here in Mayapur giving a Bhagavatam class, understanding a little bit about what Avyarta Kalatwan means. Yeah, miraculous, absolutely miraculous. Just the way I became devotee, just mind-blowing. Just one miracle after another. It was phenomenal. Simply because Srila Prabhupada was qualified to have Krishna speak through him. Because he was a confidential servant. Krishna accepted his means. So this should give us, in Nakula's departure, actually Giriraj, just the day after, I had this ride back with my wife and Harisari returning to Mayapur. I got a letter from Giriraj Swami. And he's writing a book, compiling a book, on death and dying in the Vedic tradition. And he wanted me to edit a transcription of my talk about Nirguna's departure at the opening of the hospice, because he felt that this would help a lot of devotees, give them faith, you know, in these core instructions that Srila Prabhupada's given us. It's just point blank, you know, proof that it works. That's all we gotta do. 16 rounds, regulative principles, and dedicate our life to pushing the movement out. Fast, that's it. And everything will come from that. Okay? So, if someone is strictly following Srila Prabhupada's instructions and following his move, then he has the license to make adjustments and details, but if he's not, forget it. It won't work. And his whole mood is to increase his purification, increase his service to Krishna. The more vigorously push this movement on, that will work if he makes an adjustment to a detail. Prabhupada, in a discussion between Shrutakirti asked Srila Prabhupada, how can we tell the difference between a principle and a detail? Principles can't be changed. Details you can adjust. And Srila Prabhupada's response, that takes a little intelligence. So where does that intelligence come from? From the internal energy of the Lord. So one of the keys to being able to follow Srila Prabhupada's core instructions, because we see that many, many, many people come to ISKCON and only a few stick it out in the long haul. I took initiation with 19 devotees and I'm the only one still practicing. And I don't think that's, now it's a little better because the training is better. We have Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, and it really helps a lot. This recidivism, or this return to the prison house of material life. But the key ingredient in all of this, satatam kitayanto man, atantascha didivata, namasyantas chaman bhaktya, nityayukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination. So this dridhavata, this great determination, Prabhupada would repetitively define it as, I am determined to go back to Godhead in this one lifetime. No matter what happens, and what does that mean? To be determined to go back to Godhead in this one lifetime. It doesn't mean that I'm aspiring for some kind of cheap liberation. I am determined to follow Srila Prabhupada's core instructions for this lifetime. That's the same thing, said slightly differently. So even if we slip and fall, we pick ourselves up and go right back into those core instructions. Doesn't mean if someone has an accidental fall down, but he can't pick himself up. There's no prayaschitta. This process is so powerful, he just has to honestly lament that he made a mistake and sincerely go ahead with his Krishna consciousness. And then it's non-different, the end result. Any other questions or comments? Ekalabhya Prabhu. By the way, we have to calculate the fulfillment of your respective two pieces of burfi. Okay? So let's not leave that out of the formula.
Okay?
Go ahead.
I'm very happy you made that last point.
I don't want to stay in the material world because I've broken my word to a Brahmin.
I'd like to request you for some clarification on one point.
Speak very loudly because these fans deafen me.
Prabhuji, you were discussing the point of Guru Purnima that's today's going on, and you said it hasn't been emphasized so much in our ISKCON Sampradaya.
Right.
So could you please shed some more light on this topic of ISKCON Sampradaya? Is ISKCON really a Sampradaya?
Sometimes words are used with different degrees of exactitude. Right? Like we notice with Srila Prabhupada, he'll use pure devotee in so many different ways. But he'll use, someone told me they counted the numbers of ways in Prabhupada's teaching that he used liberation
It's like about 32 different ways that he uses the word liberation.
So, because he's the founder acharya of a major Krishna conscious institution, even though we're in the Bama Madhya Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, this is a very unique branch in the tree of Lord Chaitanya's tree. Right? And it's very, very empowered because Srila Prabhupada's a Shaktivesh avatar. So its destiny is to fulfill Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Piti Viti Achayata Nagaradigram, Savatra Pachara Habe, Nananam. To spread, it's already doing it, we're going to do it more and more and more, that the chanting of Hare Krishna will be heard in every town and village. And a golden age of Krishna consciousness will be inserted in the midst of the darkness of Kali Yuga. So we're on the ground floor of this marvelous development. I mean, we can see who was it that said this? Is England for all thy faults, I love thee? Was that Churchill?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. Churchill.
Yeah. He was quite a sharp person in many ways, even though Prabhupada attributed him to having asura mentality. But another interesting quote, whenever I feel the urge to exercise, I lay down and wait for it to go away. Okay. I thought that was for old men, you know, you got to exercise, otherwise you just feel like hell. I've reached that level of categorization now, been an old man. So it's sometimes we're a little bewildered, you know, with all of the shortcomings that we see in ISKCON. But our, you know, so then we may think, ISKCON Sampradaya, yeah, tell me another one. You know, we can't even get our educational system together. But the point is this, it's a very, very, very powerful boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, which Srila Prabhupada has left on the shore for us to cross the ferocious ocean of material existence. Because the core instructions, you know, and what he's provided with his ISKCON society is actually this boat. You know, so that's how we surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. That's the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, you know, his ISKCON. So I think, you know, as history will show, that it's, you know, practically speaking, on the level of a sampradaya, you know, it would have such a powerful, widespread influence. And I mean, you know, you go into the West, you know, and where can you travel all over the world and dance in ecstasy at Ratiatrix, you know, and play your cornet? Is that a cornet or a trumpet? It's a trumpet. Okay. And you know, go down AJC Bowles Road or wherever you went, you know, in a semi-truck filled with devotees chanting Hare Krishna with all kinds of people dancing down the street behind you. You know, and, I mean, it's just incredible, the power of this movement, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Even though it may be in kind of a recessionary stage in some parts of the world right now. But these are all just lessons that we all have to learn. You know, there's many lessons to be learned from the recessions and why they took place that will, if taken to heart, will ensure the growth and spread of this ISKCON Sampradaya. Right? It's part of the learning curve. You know, to understand how to properly handle Guru Tattva, how to be a sensitive and enlightened leader,
Because these are the mistakes that has decimated, at least externally, our movement in different parts of the world, you know, in these areas. Right? And so we're going through a stiff learning curve on it, but we're making it. This is destiny, you know, this is all predicted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's not going to change. We just have to be tough enough, dridharata, you know, to stay in there through all the intense purification that's ahead of us, right? Not easy. Okay, I think we probably should end here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.